From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 26th day of March 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Elaine Cubb of Mastering the Grain Markets will be here with her final installment for the winter season. And we'll hear all about the agricultural energy markets and RINs from Dan O'Brien at K-State University. As we close out our program, we should look forward to the agricultural news with our own Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey, on this Tuesday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
Let's check the numbers on this Tuesday afternoon as they finished up in Chicago. On a settlement price, the nearby soft red winter wheat up 4.25 cents at $7.31.5. July at $7.32.25, up 3.25. From the hard red in Kansas City, 2.25 cents for the loss in the July, down at $7.64.25. Back in the corn pit from Chicago, nearby May corn, $7.31.25, down 2 cents. July at $7.12.5, down 2.75. And September at $6.25, down 2.5 cents. December futures, $5.70, down 2. The March at $5.80. These are closes, by the way, down a penny and a quarter. And the May futures there at $5.88, a half cent lower. May soybeans at $14.47.75, a settlement price 10.5 cents higher. July at $14.26.5, up 9. August soybeans at $13.82.25, up 9.75. And September, $13.12, that's up 9.25. November beans, $12.76.5, up 7.5 cents. And January, $12.81, up 7.75 for the day. Bean meal futures at $4.20.20, up $2.40. Bean oil at $50.82, that finished 38 cents higher. Live cattle from the Mercantile Exchange, June contract, $121.15, down 32.5 cents. The August, or rather June, or excuse me, the August contract at 121.15, that's down 32.5. March of feeders at 134.85, up 12.5 cents. And the April at 138.60 on a settlement price in the feeder cattle, up 20 cents for the day. April lean hog, $79.50, $1.02.5 higher. And the May futures there at $89.70, $7.5, $1.07.5 higher. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday afternoon from Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Nearby crude oil for the day, $96.18 a barrel, $1.37 higher. The June contract at $96.44, up $1.35 for the day. RBOB gasoline at $3.105, that's up 4.2 cents. And ethanol for the afternoon at $2.53.07, 0.3 cents lower. The difference between the two now stands at 56.8 cents. That's up 4.5 cents. Natural gas for the afternoon at $3.97.6, a penny, or rather 11.1 cents higher for the afternoon. And the heating oil for the day at $2.87.8, just about unchanged. Gold futures for the afternoon at $1,595.70 an ounce, down $8.80. The U.S. dollar at 82.87, that's up 0.05 for the afternoon. Just a reminder, you can always find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming from the pre-opening market report to the closing market report and everything in between.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
This is the closing market report. It is Tuesday afternoon. Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana, is on the phone line with us to take a look at the agricultural markets. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Oh, good afternoon, Todd.
So we've got some big reports that are due out on Thursday, and Cyprus is shaking the world up just a bit.
You know, we've been sitting here all day talking about this Cyprus thing, and, I don't know what they're thinking of over there, because if they do what they're talking about, it's going to destroy the confidence in the banking system throughout the world.
Indeed, that may very well do the trick, and I guess it's kind of dangerous, but the marketplace has been tenuous about it. Not terribly scared, I don't think.
You know, as we looked here, one of the things that they talked about was that's where some of the biggest oil traders in the world are at, and of course, as we looked at the energy today, it had a very strong day.
Well, what are your expectations for Thursday's big report? Stocks report is due out, as well as the acreage report.
Well, you know, one of the things that scared us tremendously this morning was, and might not have been thought of by others, was we saw the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, as of the close today, going to raise the amount of margin needed to trade a contract of corn by about 33%. And does that tell us that they think the government's going to come out with a wildly bullish or bearish number to move this market tremendously? It surely, you know, pretends to the fact that they're scared a little bit of that. But, you know.
Well, they would do that in case of volatility, and the volatility could be to either side, and that would likely be related to the acreage report, I suppose, could be with stocks report as well.
Well, you know, the stocks report, we don't look for a lot of things. We're so doggone tight. I don't know how they can change the numbers a whole lot there. You know, the acreage, of course, you know, like I say, it can vary, and they can, you know, decide to switch some one way or the other along the way. But, you know, we look for a bullish stocks report, and we look for a bearish acreage report just out of everything we've seen, because we are so tight with cash corn and cash beans, and we are planning to have a better year than last year that should add to our stocks when it's all said and done.
What do you suppose that the trade is feeling about the total number of corn acres that will be planted?
The total number of corn acres to be planted, of course, the average guess is 97.33. You know, 98.5 to 100 million has been thrown around for a long time by some of the firms like that. I imagine we're going to be somewhere close to that 98 million acres.
All right. Thank you so much for taking the time with us.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday afternoon. You can hear him again at our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. Or you can visit our mobile site at m.willag.org.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and service geared specifically to the agricultural community.
It's time to define a marketing term. Commodity broker, analyst, and author of Mastering the Grain Markets, Elaine Cubb, joins us. She believes the key to profitable grain trading is building knowledge about the fundamental practices of the industry. Today, she'll help us keep track of a crop's supply and demand and USDA government reports and how they might fit into your trading program. This is a good week to do that topic, Elaine. As of Thursday of this week, we'll have a couple of really big reports that are due out. Tell me what your philosophy is as it relates to USDA report days.
Well, you mentioned this Thursday's reports, and they're a really good demonstration of why this is a really important topic. The last 2 years, on March 30th or March 31st of 2011 and 2012, the corn market, for instance, went limit up on both of those days, and it's basically due to the reports being released at the end of March. So that's a demonstration of how report-based data that comes from the USDA is really, really watched by traders and can be very influential to prices and make them very volatile. So it is important for people who are participating in these futures markets or in the grain markets in general to know when they're happening and to have some sort of idea about how it can affect your trading positions.
And they can do that by tracking down USDA's calendars for reports, or they can listen to radio stations like this one?
Yes. Yes, exactly. And I'll kind of go through some of the ones that there are, and I'll tell you a little about my philosophies of which ones are more important than others. There's not a lot of daily reports that affect the grain markets. The livestock markets do receive daily cutout reports, but there are weekly reports that show up every week for the grain markets that traders watch. And all year long, it's the export sales and separately the export inspections report that kind of show the pace of how grain is moving out of the country, obviously. And those are very reliable reports, but they're released about a week after the data is collected. So again, so these are the kinds of reports that maybe don't have immediate impact on changes in price. You don't see a lot of price volatility from them because that information should theoretically already be priced into an efficient market. But coming up, going through into the spring, you're going to start having, at this same time, I believe on your radio program, reports on the weekly crop progress reports. And these also can sometimes be discounted by the trade because they're very subjective. They just send out thousands of observers all around the country to kind of drive around, do a windshield tour, and see what do the crops look like. But you can have situations like last summer where the crops might look fine, they might be green, but not be pollinating correctly or be short or, you know, otherwise. It's not always possible to get real good data information from these subjective viewpoints, but you average them all together and they can be useful. There's also the big ones are the monthly reports from the USDA called the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates. That's the WASD reports, and they tend to be very influential to traders, more some months than others, because these are just sort of, they're sort of, I don't want to say wishy-washy, but they're economic projections that these economists sitting in Washington, D.C. take a lot of data, and they spend a couple of months or weeks really thinking about it, and then they release it. And when they become volatile or when they create market volatility is when they're showing something that the market didn't expect. So unusual numbers there can create some volatility, but some months they're kind of not so important. But coming up on Thursday, these big ones that really do tend to have a lot of volatility are the quarterly grain stocks, because these are not estimates. These are not projections. These are survey-based actual numbers of how much grain is left in the country. And it doesn't always make sense because it doesn't always jive with what the projections were. So they tend to really surprise traders. And the other one coming up this Thursday is the annual prospective plantings report, which again is survey based. It's real data. As of March 1st, they asked farmers, you know, what do you intend to plant this spring? So those intentions can change, but it's the first look of survey-based data that traders really have for what acreage might be in the upcoming year.
And so those are the reports that we go through regularly here on our radio stations and that you and other brokers work with. There are a couple of others that come up during the growing season. The crop production reports start, I think, in the month of May and give an estimate of what crop production looks like in the United States. And then, of course, in June, we have the acreage report as well.
Right, exactly. And again, those tend to be backward-looking and already be priced into the market, but they are very important for official data. You know, here's the thing. There's lots of private estimators. You know, I can sit down and tell you some guess for what I think corn acreage would be in 2013. I mean, lots of private estimating companies do that. But the USDA's numbers, even when they're backward-looking, they're important data because they are the one official source of data. And they look internationally. You know, a lot of the different countries, Australia has a good estimating system. Brazil does, obviously. China, we tend to be less certain about the numbers that they put out. So looking at the USDA's official data, even for international numbers, is also helpful.
How does a producer work these into their risk management plan?
Well, you know, just be aware that the days that some of these more influential reports come out tend to be volatile. So I noticed that the CBOT or the CME today is announcing that they're going to raise corn margins tonight. Then this, I'm sure, is in anticipation of more volatility coming up on Thursday. So it can affect how much money you have to have in margin. It can affect the prices of options because it increases volatility. And it can just make really great opportunities if you have, you know, a big overreaction. Let's say there's a bullish overreaction to some number, but then the prices, you know, slump back down after that. Here's some opportunities to really get some excitement, some speculative overexcitement that can give you some opportunities sometimes.
Elaine, it has been a real pleasure talking to you all winter long about the fundamentals of the marketplace. How might people get hold of a copy of your book, Mastering the Grain Markets?
Well, Todd, it has been my pleasure. I've really enjoyed talking with you. And I would direct people either to the book's website, which is www.masteringthegrainmarkets.com, or they can find it online anywhere that ebooks are sold or as a physical book on Amazon.com. And this is a really timely topic because from here on out, you're going to be talking about the crop progress reports, and we're really going to see how 2013 shapes up.
Thanks, Elaine. You can always pick up a copy of Elaine's book online if you'd like. It's available in the iTunes store, in the Amazon bookstore, online at www.masteringthegrainmarkets.com. Hard copy as well at most bookstores, online at www.masteringthegrainmarkets.com. I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for this agricultural weather report comes from Busey. Busey believes that healthy businesses strengthen our local economy. They have a commercial banking team with 20-plus years of experience providing lending solutions to meet unique business needs. Busey.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Tuesday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. On the phone line, Dan O'Brien of K-State Extension to take up the agricultural energy markets. Let's talk about the RINs market, or the renewable identification numbers that are tagged to each and every gallon of ethanol that is produced. And then, and I'll make this fairly quickly, if there's an overproduction in a particular year, it's a certificate that can be turned in later in time, and now we're later in time, and counts for a gallon of production of ethanol that may not be produced now. But the certificates themselves have become a pretty hot topic over the last month or so. Why is that the case?
The EPA came out and had indicated that they felt we had enough RIN certificates to cover any shortfalls of between production and what the EPA renewable fuel standard required for 2013. So it looks like for 2013 that we should be in good shape. Again, EPA had stated that. There's some other independent analysis out of the University of Missouri, Pat Westhoff out of FAPRI, and also out of there at Illinois, basically indicating the same thing. But concerns were raised about what we might be running short of in terms of RIN requirements for 2014, particularly if we have another tight year corn production-wise and ethanol production gets cut back in the face of the increasing renewable fuel standard off into that time frame. So a lot of the issue here has to do with, I guess, with regard to the RIN market run-up here of late would be the rush or the worry, risk management practices being taken by folks in the ethanol industry to make sure they have enough RINs to cover what they might not be able to produce out of their plants heading off into the coming year. So big run-up, a lot of attention in the media, and certainly we have a volatile market for RINs now, and that gathers attention all across the financial and energy complexes.
How much has the price jumped?
Well, quite a bit. We've seen prices as high as 80, well up in the 80 and 90 cents per gallon figure in a range for RINs over within the last month or so, and we had been much, much lower, a matter of 3 or 4 or 5 cents if you go back a year or so. So we have kind of a classic, very inelastic situation to where we have a mandated use of ethanol in motor fuels here in the U.S. coming in through 2013 and on into 2014, but yet the fear is that we might not have enough physical product to actually accomplish that. So in the gap step these RINs, these certificates that allow the plants to be in compliance. So here in a tight situation like that, what had been priced for 3 or 4 or 5 cents per gallon, now it jumped up here recently to as much as 80 and 90 cents. So that's really the tight market, inelastic situation we found ourselves in.
It's clear, I think, even without, even with a good crop in the United States, a maize crop or a corn crop, that there will be a problem at some point in producing the advanced portion of the biofuel section of the RFS, and that at some point the policy will have to be opened up in Washington, D.C. What are the discussions that are surrounding the RINs, ethanol made from corn, the advanced biofuels, and the kinds of policy changes that might be made or considered?
of course, you're touching on an issue here in Kansas that is all that much of a sensitive point. We have here in Kansas at least one plant that's geared up to meet USDA greenhouse gas requirements and use grain sorghum as an advanced biofuel source to meet the EPA requirements. But without question, by the time you look at the cellulosic biomass prospects for production of ethanol and note that we have had a track record and really don't see a major change coming within in prospects for us falling short of our biomass cellulosic ethanol production goals, it would seem that in the long run, I think that the absent something like E15 or some other change or E85 coming in and quote allowing for increased ethanol usage in fuels, barring that, I would certainly agree with what your contention is, that it would seem that the market will eventually rule the policy. U.S. fuel consumption, as it's been moving sideways to lower, has been going on a contrary path to what the renewable fuel standard has been. So I don't doubt that reasonable people will come together and find a solution to the issue. And of course, from the ethanol industry's point of view, they would like to see E15 come into play. But again, there's resistance from other sectors wondering about, engine wear and tear and other issues. So I think we can only anticipate that these debates will be somewhat boisterous here in 2013. And if we run into the situation in 2014 that we're anticipating, it'll become boisterous plus in terms of trying to figure out how to reconcile a level U.S. fuel demand with the renewable fuel standard and to see how that can go forward without undue stress to the U.S. economy.
And again, I think it's clear that this debate will have to take place no matter the size of the U.S. corn crop. It's simply there is a gap based on the ability to produce advanced biofuels.
Well, I think that's right. I really think in the bigger picture that what was unanticipated in all this was the leveling off to decline in the U.S. fuel consumption and how an E10 standard applied to that would work out in terms of the renewable fuel standard. That's to regulate the use of ethanol bioenergy, inputs into the ethanol, into the fuel supply, if I can say that better. Anyway, the point being that I think as we go forward, this divergence that we've seen between, again, U.S. fuel consumption, 130, 135, somewhere like that, billion gallons per year, as opposed to the renewable fuel standard jumping up to 13.8, 14.4, and then 15, is really the bone of contention. So I think to the degree that we have that gap and it remains ongoing, then and also to the degree that basically RINs are the means that we have of filling that gap without mandating and really distorting corn usage or grain sorghum or whatever usage upon the industry, I think we'll have a public policy debate that will have to bring those issues together. And again, we're having that right now, and if anything, it will grow just stronger as we head off into the coming year.
Dan, thank you so much.
Thanks, Todd. Talk to you later.
You too. Dan O'Brien is with K-State University, joins us here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. Don Day is away for the afternoon. When we return, Dave Dickey will be here with today's Ag News.
It's National Nougat Day. Nougat most likely originated in southern Europe, where it was largely associated with the Christmas season. By the way, today's nougat is nothing like the original, which was often made with sugar or honey, roasted nuts, and sometimes chopped candied fruit. On this day in agricultural history in 1753, Benjamin Thompson, who was also known as Count von Rumford, was born. Rumford was an American physician who invented the percolator, a pressure cooker, and a kitchen stove. He is frequently credited with creating the dessert Baked Alaska, as well as thermal underwear. In 1936, Fred Maytag died. Maytag was an American industrialist who began a farm implement business in Newton, Iowa. He made threshing machines, band cutters, and self-feeder attachments. By 1902, the company was the world's largest manufacturer of threshing machine feeders. But it was another machine that would prove the test of time. Maytag also built washing machines. The first was the 1907 Parsons Pastime. It was a hand-powered cypress wooden tub. In 1996, David Packard died. He was the founder, along with William Hewlett, of the Hewlett-Packard Company. Before they became famous for computers and printers, some of their early inventions were an automatic urinal flusher and a weight loss shock machine. And that's this day in agricultural history.
This is the Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Dave Dickey is here now with today's Ag News.
In agricultural news, South Korea, China, and Japan launched the first round of negotiations today for a free trade bloc that would be the world's third largest after North America and the European Union. South Korea said in a statement that officials will discuss mostly administrative issues during the 3 days of talks in Seoul that will end on Thursday. The meeting will determine the areas from agriculture to intellectual property rights that will be included in future negotiations. Separate trade talks are also underway between China and South Korea. The American Banker Association's latest annual Farm Bank Performance Report says that in 2012, U.S. agriculture banks increased farm and ranch lending by $10 billion, almost 14%, and claimed $81.8 billion in assets at the end of the year. These 2,215 farm banks also added more than 3,600 jobs, a 4.2% increase, and they now account for 90,500 jobs for rural Americans. The report noted in particular that farm banks experienced an improvement in asset quality in 2012, while non-performing loans declined to 1.49% of total loans, close to pre-recession levels. A realignment in Brazil's PIS coffers tax system could stimulate soy meal and soy oil shipments and slow recent breakneck expansion in soybean exports. The Brazilian crushing industry has long complained about the system of tax exemptions whereby soybeans bought for export are free of the PIS coffers sales tax, but purchases for crushing and subsequent export as a meal and oil are taxed and then partially rebated in the form of credits. The federal government is thinking of establishing compensation payments on meal and oil shipments aimed at partially neutralizing the PIS coffers burden to boost the export of value-added items. Rivals DuPont Company and Monsanto Company have struck a series of technology licensing agreements that will expand the range of seed products they can offer farmers. The agreements, under which DuPont will eventually pay the St. Louis crop biotechnology company a total of $1.75 billion, includes a multi-year royalty-bearing license for Monsanto's next-generation soybean technologies in the U.S. and Canada. DuPont and Monsanto also agreed to dismiss their respective antitrust and first-generation Roundup Ready soybean patent lawsuits pending in U.S. federal court in St. Louis. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report. Have a great afternoon, and we'll talk with you again on Thursday. Dave will be in my seat tomorrow, as I'll busy with a College of Aces event.